Hello and welcome back to 2022 with What the Bark, the Rightpaw podcast. We're back again for a new season. We're really excited and again want to extend a big welcome to all of our two and four-legged listeners who are joining us today on the podcast. Of course, it wouldn't be What the Bark if we didn't welcome back our fantastic co-host, Genetic George. George, welcome to season two.
Oh, another breeding season, Nathan, we're into now. Who would have thought? How many litters can we have for each breeding season? Remind me. I think we had 14 puppies last year.
14 episodes.
Episodes, that's right. So, 2022, hopefully it's a year where we're not going to mention that word again.
The C word.
Yeah, the C word. And hopefully it's just a really great year for everyone. But I'm excited about today's guests. What a great way to bring in the new year, because we're going to talk to someone where if there's ever been anything that's more popular than genetic testing and right poor, I think it's been this industry.
Absolutely.
Over the last 18 months. So this is what a great way to start 2022.
Yep.
And I'm also excited because wait till we tell you what we've got. This is live as well.
This is raw. We're doing it live.
So drum roll. Nathan, let's introduce our guests for the first episode of 2022.
Absolutely. And, we've all been locked down. So not everyone's been locked down. People have been on the move. Dog movers have been on the move. And we're really excited to have Michael and Tricia from Azaburn Animal Transport joining us on the call today. Welcome, Michael and Tricia.
Hi, guys. How are you going?
Hi, how are you all going?
Hey, Michael and Trish, transport. If there's ever been anything that's been huge over the last sort of 18 months, bigger than genetic testing, it's been pet transport. And just so we can paint the picture here, Nathan, describe where Michael is currently.
Well, I mean, not only do we have an episode about transport, but Michael is in the driver's seat currently on the road. I can see some of the crates and kennels behind him as well. And he's coming to us live. Where are you driving to, Michael? Tell us.
I'm actually down in country Victoria at the moment.
Amazing.
So, just on my way back to Brisbane.
So Trish is in base camp doing all the sort of admin following, and then Michael is in the van driving as we speak. This is the first.
You couldn't ask for more.
No. I mean, we've had groomers on, Michael, but they've never been live grooming. Have they, Nathan?
No, this is the first.
We've had judges on. They haven't actually been in a show ring. Hey, wait a sec. That could be the next level we take these podcasts to, Nathan, is we take them to live, raw. I'm excited because there's lots of questions as well, and transport being a big boom in industry currently. Let's hear about it, hey, Nathan? Yeah.
Absolutely. And Tricia, I know you're in base camp. Where are you? Tell us, where's base camp for you?
I'm on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. Our vehicles leave out of Logan Village in Queensland. We have them located in most of the country. So we've got one in Sydney, one in Melbourne. They go across to Adelaide. We have a few taxi vehicles as well. And then we do flights, international, domestic as well. So we're really busy. We've got a lot going on. And, we service all of Australia. That's the most important thing. But road, Cairns to Adelaide.
And how did it all kick off? How did it start? Because I know, Tricia, you've been in sort of the transport world for a little while. And, Azaburn sort of has been founded in sort of the last sort of 12 months, I think it is. So tell us a little bit about how it all got started, or how it all kicked off.
Well, no, I recently moved up to Brisbane about 12 months ago, and through that process, I just started helping people because of COVID transport their dogs. There was a bit of a market there, and a lot of people in the industry just weren't doing it right. And overcharging people. So I started helping friends, and then Trish and I got into a discussion and gone, well, let's do this properly and let's help people. So we came together, and with Trish's knowledge in the market, especially with the flights and stuff like that, and my road sense, we got in and started doing it and doing it properly for people.
Excellent. Great combination. And Michael, you've brought up that word again. We'll try and avoid that five-letter word, but you did COVID. That's okay. We can cope. Now, let me start. But behind every great transport person, there must be a breed. Do you breed as well? Do you have a dog, Trish and Michael?
Yeah. So I breed Bernese Mountain Dogs. So,
okay. I thought so.
Hence the name.
Yes. So that actually started from my kennel name as a Bern. So, and Trish does breed herself with Chows and British Bulldogs. But, Berners are my passion. I've had them for about 35 years now.
Yeah, it's interesting because most transport people that we do talk to have a background in the dog area too and usually get into it because of just the difficulties they've found. And, yes, there is a large increase in road transport, and mainly around, there's that word, Nathan, some breeds that are based on, what do we call it, Nathan?
Brachycephalic breeds, brachycephalic breeds.
Your pronunciations are much better than George's. So for Trish and Michael, any words, we leave it to the better educated, more sophisticated Nathan.
No, well, I cannot take claim to this because Trish is actually a breeder of brachycephalic breeds. So she's the one, she knows. And I'm sure that's probably influenced a lot about how you've set up your animal transport as well.
Absolutely. It is a major influence on how the vehicles have been set up, as well as all the processes surrounding them. This vehicle, I don't know if you can see bits and pieces of it there. You can see that it's all insulated underneath the, you can see that's all insulated.
Oh, yeah, you're getting the interior view.
Yeah, the air conditioner that you can see halfway down there. Now, that is everyone's got air conditioning, but that takes it to a whole new level. That one is just dedicated to the animals in the back there, and that vehicle can be turned off for up to 12 hours and it continues to run. Wow. So they are never without temperature control. And the brachies are sensitive to both heat and cold. So it needs to be the right temperature for them the whole way through. And then you've got your heavy coated breeds as well that don't do so crash hot in heat either. So they need to be looked after just as well too.
And the challenge is you can't get those on airplane. It's difficult to get any approval for those sort of those breeds to go onto an airplane. Am I right, Trish? Is that one of the key?
That's correct. You have to jump through a few hoops to get that clearance from the airways. Some of the questions are set up to deliberately fail them. A dog that is stressed will fail the airways exam for the flights. By all good means, they shouldn't be. If they are stressing, they shouldn't be in a plane. This is the road transport is far better for them. It's calmer. It's just like going for a car ride. It is longer, but there's a lot less stress involved.
Correct. Look, I couldn't agree more with you, Trish. I had to bring Mary, a little griffin, down from up in Cairns to here, and choosing road transport was just a no-brainer for me. And look, she struggles to even breathe when you're walking her sometimes because it's just the nature of them. And we can talk about the trip and how it was, but it was just it was easy, it was comfortable. I think it was, as for her as a breed, seeing how she sort of reacts now, it was literally a real no-brainer for me. But I really want Michael to describe, behind every great transport is his car. Give me the model and make of your car. Is it a Mustang van you're driving there?
They're very proud of this vehicle. I was talking to Trisha about it as well. They've decked it out. It's like Pimp My Ride level of transport.
So, mate, it's one of the large Iveco vans. So plenty of room inside. We have spent some money on fitting it out properly because of the brachies and because of my breed. I want them to be comfortable.
Yeah.
So it's got a 24-volt air conditioner set up in it that runs off a battery bank. So it doesn't need to be plugged into power, but it also has a secondary system that if that does fail for whatever reason, there's an exhaust fan that runs off a 12-volt system. So the van's fully insulated. We've also set it up that if it does rain, there's an awning for customers to collect their dogs under, so we're not all getting wet. But, it's just a setup process, and you know, we put water tank in it, so it's only got filtered water. I actually have filters at home that, so it's just like them getting bottled water, you know, and just comfort level to the max for them, effectively.
Yeah.
And peace of mind for me as well when I am transporting.
Transporting, you know, that's right.
Some of these people do sleep in their vans, but they're not getting a decent night's sleep if they're sleeping in their vans with their dogs. I'd like to know and go to sleep knowing that the dogs are sorted of a night time, so I can get a decent night's sleep between my trips. So, you know, because you're on the road, you need to be awake, and you need to be fully alert for anything going on over the back. So,
and tell us a bit about what does the life of a dog mover look like? I mean, what are the trips that you're covering? You know, how many days are you on? Like, how does the logistics of it work?
So it is different depending on the routes that, or the routes that we take. But generally for myself, I'll leave of a early Monday morning. I'll drive through down to Goulburn, whichever way that sort of takes me, and I spend the night in Goulburn. So doing multiple pickups along the way and drops, stopping a few times, not very often, but stopping a few times to walk the dogs that need walking, you know, because they generally will sleep. And there's no need to over-exercise them on the road. And I know that with my own dogs. They'll sleep 6 to 8 hours without stopping. You know, so most dogs will sort of cope with that, but they are walked and whatnot. I'll pull up in Goulburn for the night, feed them, and then, you know, we tucker in for the night down there, get up early the next morning, walk them, and get on the road for Melbourne. I stay in Melbourne for the night because I sort of meet my Adelaide driver Tuesday afternoons. So, and then Wednesday I head back up to Shepparton, do a full clean out of the van, and wait for my Adelaide driver to come back. And then basically from there I start heading back on Thursday. So I get a bit of a break, but it's a different sort of a break. It's still work, cleaning the van out, sterilizing everything, washing and all the rest of it. And then, yeah, start heading back on Thursday and back into Brisbane Fridays. Have the weekends off and turn around and go do it all again.
And you know what, Michael, you make it sound so easy, but I know all the work is done by Trish, coordinating everything, putting it all together, making sure you've got the pickups and the drops.
She's got the itinerary planned to a T.
Am I right, Trish? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
There's a lot of background work that happens. Our phones go pretty well non-stop here, emails constantly. Yeah. There's a lot of quoting. And then it's making sure we're not overloading vehicles, not having the vehicle crisscrossing across the country so that it gets there in a reasonable time, making sure all of it has to surround around the driver's safety first and foremost. So the vehicle needs to get from where it's going, get to where it's going at a decent pace and not have the drivers exhausted when they get there. So that's why this particular vehicle that Michael is driving, it does not do door drop-offs because that just adds hours upon end. If we need to do that, we bring in a secondary vehicle, which again, you know, that is a driver safety as well as being able to continue with the service. And yeah, there's a lot of logistics around it. Because there's not just this vehicle on the road, there's other ones doing North Queensland. Then we've got the taxi vehicles coming in and out, plus we've got the flights going everywhere as well. And that's airline containers into airports and everything else goes behind.
And there's certain records that you must have. I remember when Mary, dogs need to be vaccinated and you need to have correct records of those. Am I right?
Yes. Vaccinated, and we like to have microchips as well.
Yes. You'd hate to be dropping off. And you know what, Trish and Michael, I remember for me it's as the expecting, you know, new parent, you're excited and I remember there was a tracking thing you could follow where the van is. Is that something you have with on your system where you can sort of log in at a certain point and see just where Michael stopped off and how long he's taking at the pub or whatever and stopping around and having his chicken schnitzel parmigiana?
I certainly do, and everyone has one. When they do their booking, they're actually sent that as part of their confirmation.
Oh, that's amazing.
That link. And I have a whole different level here, and it's I know how long he stops for everything, and if you know what speed he's been doing and everything. Well, so anyone ever asks me where a vehicle is because they can't find it, I can find it.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
You're the eye in the sky.
So, Michael, you can't blame the dogs, mate. You're being tracked. That's the only negative thing about your job. You know, you are literally tracked. It's almost like they've got a chip inside you. And I remember there was a point where I was told I've got to pick up Mary at, it was at Officeworks in sort of Fitzroy, and I thought, what am I getting, A4 paper? What am I in Officeworks? But it's because it was a large van, and you know, like you said before, Trish, you can't be dropping off at people's homes. You've got to have these collection points, and is that something that you guys do as well, is you have certain areas that are, you let people pick up from? Is that what you were mentioning before, Trish?
Yes, we do. So we cover most of the main areas so people don't have to drive too far the majority of the time unless they are really in a remote area.
Yeah. And I was wondering why Officeworks was it something maybe Officeworks gives you free photocopy paper? They're thinking if I can get someone there with their dog, maybe they'll pop in there and, you know, maybe buy a pen or something. I was trying to work out why Officeworks of all these, you know, Michael, have you got any, does anything kickbacks from those organisations? It's okay to
No, mate. There's no kickbacks. We just pick sort of an easy central location that's just off the highway. Like my last stop in Melbourne is actually out the front of a Dan Murphy's. We won't go into reasons.
Very convenient, Luke.
No, not at all. So we sort of pick central locations. You know, sometimes it's McDonald's, sometimes it's service stations, things like that. So just somewhere convenient for people and parking.
And I'm really interested as well. So who are the people that are booking these, you know, these transport, appointments? So is it breeders? Is it predominantly new puppy owners? Is it, you know, people that are moving house? Who are the people that are using, you know, dog movers?
It's a lot of mixed people at the moment. So we're actually building a very good referral base at the moment with a lot of breeders that will only use us, and they try and do the bookings themselves. But we are getting a few coming through from buyers that have just done their research and done their quotes and things. So we're getting a lot of new clientele in that particular area. But we're getting a lot of people just coming back to us, like the breeders. And a lot of show people and stuff like that. And we've even started taking on some racing greyhounds as well. So, it's a mixture.
And let's not forget too, Trish and Michael, that there are people here that are using this to ship, you know, breeding animals too, from one breeding one state to another.
Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
It's an industry that's not just for the pet. I was picking up mine, there was a drop off of a stud dog going to another breeder. You know, it's easy, it's quick, it's less stressful. They're used in those. So breeders also make up a fairly large part of this industry as well.
Massive, massive. And, you know, I'm actually on my way today to pick up two rescue dogs as well that are coming out of pounds and going up to a rescue organisation in Tweed. So, you know, that's sort of picking up as well. And they're very, short on money, so we try and look after them the best we can. But, every dog needs a home as far as I'm concerned, so you're trying to help those ones out. But it's a lot of organisations as well that are trying to get the transport too.
So I always ask one of my Dion doorbell questions, and these are questions that really just a kid would ask, not an adult.
Dion is George's son, avid podcast listener. And
you know, sometimes when you're driving, you know, you're driving your kids, you always get, are we there yet? How long to go? You know, do you ever sedate any dogs that might just need to be calmed down? And, you know, do you stop?
I wish.
Okay.
I wish. I've got one in the vehicle at the moment that I've just picked up, a 9-week-old German Shepherd. And silly thing, the breeder actually fed him this morning. So I've already stopped to clean up spew.
Yes. Okay.
And the dog is very unsettled. He's actually, you can't hear him right now. I was going to be getting out of the vehicle to talk to you because he's been crying a little bit, but he has settled down now that he's emptied his stomach. So that's one thing that we try and make sure they don't do generally, but this was a last-minute pull on my heartstrings, so we've picked the dog up, is we don't we get them not to feed them before transport, so because they can get upset stomachs. But yeah, we definitely don't drug these dogs. I'd rather turn the music up and just hear screaming from a puppy or barking from a puppy than, you know, sedate it and something go wrong.
Yeah. And talking about music, any particular type of music, Michael? I know these days you can get on Spotify and it's got a dog playlist and everything. Is it music that you want to hear, or is it music for the, to, you know, for the dog?
Definitely music that I want to hear.
Oh, okay.
Definitely if I'm turning it up loud to drown out the sounds in the back.
And the second question he asked me, and I might sort of put this towards Trish, who does more of the admin, is, do you ever get any love letters from an owner, same with the dogs? And when the dog's picked up, there's a really nice letter here, welcome to, you know, handwritten, anything like that. Do you get any love letters, Trish, written to accompany the dog when it's picked up by the new owner?
No, we don't get love letters, not handwritten. But we do get a lot of lovely emails, and I've had probably three or four this morning about dogs that have turned up with photos. We do actually, our system automatically ask for feedback on our driver and how long we've been going and how many trips we've done and dogs we've moved. For all of our drivers so far, I've actually got 5 stars.
Well done. You know how hard it is to get a 5-star, Trish. Everyone's happy to give 1 stars. I find this. Yeah, and it's interesting because when we picked up Mary, the first thing the driver did when we dropped off is a photo of me holding Mary to make sure, you know, the owner, and check the ID and everything. Yep. So it's interesting. Just a little thing, you know, maybe that could be a little handwritten love letter with the dog as you go. I'm just trying to think of areas that add those. And there is, every dog is restrained. And you mentioned before, Michael, there is pit stops, isn't there? You do stop. Okay.
And that's mainly, so I generally stop if there's accidents in the vehicle, which happens with puppies. I generally stop and clean them out straight away so the pups aren't rolling in it. But we do, you could call them comfort stops every now and then. I know some companies, they say they do it every 2 to 3 hours. I don't have that much time on my hands. The trips would be, you know, a week long to get down if you did that. But generally probably every 5 to 6 hours I'll do a bit of a comfort stop. And it's good for me to get out and stretch my legs for a good period of time as well. Yeah. So, but like I said earlier, most dogs, they just sleep. They get comfortable in the aircon and the movement of the vehicle, except when you're on country Victorian roads because it's really rough. But the rest of the time up and down the highway, it's really comfy and smoothing for them. So they just sleep the whole way.
Yeah, it's really interesting that what you mentioned before about, you know, such a simple thing like not feeding the pup before they go in a long car trip, you know, makes complete sense, but probably not something that you really think about. So are there other things which, you know, owners or breeders or people that are transporting a dog should know before they put the pup in the vehicle or the dog in the vehicle? What are some of those, I guess, sort of common things that you'd advise?
Well, that's the main thing, is just making sure that they don't get fed in the morning. And even baby puppies will survive without feeding. A lot of people think that they've got to give them something, but it's just going to make them sick. You know, and they do get fed. We actually ask them to provide food for nighttime meals. So, because they, you know, no pup should go 24 hours without food, and only a little bit. They don't need a full meal or to make up for a day's worth of food. Pups will survive. And, you know, I have stuff here on standby if I have any issues with a pup, like a small Pomeranian or something like that. You know, because sometimes the pups aren't coming from the best environments. You know, so we have things on standby and we know where the vets are. So we can always pop in if there's an emergency or anything like that. But, you know, that the main thing is don't feed before transport.
And Tricia, on your end as well, anything that you advise owners or breeders before, you know, they're getting in the vehicle?
We, and like Michael did touch on with regards to asking them to supply their own food. And the reason we ask that is so they're not getting a changed diet midway through transport, because that just results in getting diarrhea and they turn up to their new owners with diarrhea. We also ask, and this is something we're really strict on, if any dog is showing any signs or symptoms of any illness before going out on transport, that you contact us and the people receiving and you delay them. We don't want any illnesses going through dogs that are on transport. People want their pups turning up in the best condition possible. Your smaller dogs that Michael touched on there, that they have, we have the glucose and other such things to work with that can't hold their blood sugar properly, that you do supply that. If you know that your dog is one of those breeds, particularly the teacup Pomeranians and such, we do want them microchipped by ID so that we can scan them on and scan them off and make sure you're getting the right dog. So we do ask that the breeder supply that. We also ask that they supply a fit to travel certificate, and that also for the people receiving them, it's another mind that the pet that have been examined by a vet, they don't have heart issues, they're not having respiratory issues, they're the things they need to be fit and healthy to do to get on there.
So this is
and, that, yeah, and potentially that they're clean,
yeah,
you know, yeah. No, not dirty puppies,
yeah.
I mean, just simple things, but you know, it's stuff that you might not consider or think about, yeah. You know, fit to travel is a good one as well.
And just I like to ask some, you know, ridiculous and facts questions to help, you know, keep me sort of understanding this. Have you ever had someone who's, you've transported down, what's the most dogs they've ever had? Like, have you ever had someone who's actually got four puppies and they're going to one person? What's the most?
Nine.
What? Nine going to one? Hey, yeah. Going to one person.
Yeah. I've transported nine puppies and I think it was 10 kittens the other week. Yeah.
What is it? You do cats as well. Here we are, yeah. Beginning of course, kitten. We forgot Nathan.
Yeah, it's animal transport. It's every. I know. And here we are just discriminating and talking about dogs.
Dogs. Any other animals that we should know about, Trish, or about these?
We've transported lizards and birds.
All right. And another one I wanted to know, do you transport semen in liquid nitrogen? Has anyone made that request for
yes
you? Yes,
I've done that too.
Wow, yep. This is like, so you're transporting, you know, this is like, God. Now, it's just the way things are traveling here for our business, have you thought about transporting people's swabs down to us? Because it'd be quicker than and cheaper than Australia Post and Express.
There's always an Orovet question.
Oh yes,
always. Yeah, like that.
We could discuss that, guys, about maybe bringing people's swabs down and charging them for those, because Express Post is like $9 a sample and it gets there with anything between 3 to 50 days. And think about it, we've got 100 swabs. This ballpark that, maybe discuss that based on the way things are going.
You give me a call on that one later.
Yeah, I will.
Well, actually, Michael, I've got one that I know that I'm going to want back quite urgently, and I don't want to do the dog until after Christmas. So, you know,
it's not an urgent result. These are my nightmare, Nathan.
You started, George.
Yeah, at least now you can blame Australia Post.
Australia Post, it really is. So I'll just give it to Michael to drop in on his way across to Roeville.
Yeah, okay, I'll meet you halfway at the Dan Murphy's, Michael.
Yeah, maybe at Dan Murphy's. Great place.
Yeah. So interesting, yeah, if you're coming from one. Have you ever been sort of, you know, traffic police do stop a lot of cars on the road. Any incidents there, Michael, that you want to talk about? No speeding tickets or anything? I mean, any of they stop and go, what have you got in here? And you've said frozen semen or, you know, 35 dogs and puppies.
With that five-letter word that's going around at the moment, I did get asked, well, there's been two incidences. I got pulled up, or the coppers pulled up next to me asking me questions when I was delivering a puppy. And then I actually had the police called on me at Dan Murphy's. So the police pulled up in front of me asking me what was going on, because they thought I was selling puppies out of my vehicle. And I'm like, no, just transporting and they're all gone. So there was no sales. Oh, okay, off you go. So they've all been really good about it once you sort of explain what you're doing. But, you know, the van looks the part too. So that helps.
And it's a good point, actually, because I know there was a lot of confusion during COVID around, you know, crossing borders and what was allowed, what was not allowed. Was that difficult to negotiate, or was it, you know, fairly straightforward for you guys? You know, you had a clear reason to cross the border, no issues?
Yeah, no issues really. We just had to make sure that we had, now being vaccinated, and also just have the correct paperwork and have swabs done. The last few times getting across, it's been quite easy, a little bit too easy to be honest. But yeah, at the moment with everything opening back up, there's been no real issues. And we've always, I need to cover myself. I live with my mother, my 70-year-old mother, so I've got to be careful with her. I don't need her getting sick. So I'm always extra careful on the roads, especially in the height of everything. But yeah, it's just making sure they tick all the boxes and, you know, there's no issues.
Yeah, interesting. And Trish, another one of my ridiculous questions, sorry. Do you ever get someone who's, you know, more and more people on holidays and staying at places, do you ever get someone who's going, look, can you transport, I live here and I'm going for a holiday here, can you transport my dog to this place for me?
Yes, we do. One of the dogs that we've just taken up to North Queensland has gone up for holidays. They flew up and it was a Frenchie, so it wasn't flying. We took that up, and on the next trip back, we'll be bringing it back.
There you go. See, what an industry. Who would have thought, you know, 15 years ago that an industry is, you know, transporting dogs in a van would ever take off? Really, they would have called you lunatics. But I'm sure, Michael, you would pass other pet transport drivers and, like, truck drivers wave at each other and toot your horn at each other.
Don't go that far, but yeah. We definitely pass each other and follow each other and, yeah. Similar meeting points.
Interesting.
And you said as well, like, at the beginning that, you know, you'd seen a lot of people that weren't necessarily doing it properly, or, you know, transport that wasn't being, you know, done to the right standard. So for the average person who's, you know, looking to book a transport company or to, you know, to transport their dogs, obviously, you know, they'll hopefully call Azaburn, and we'll put your details in our show notes as well. But what should they be looking for as well, you know, from a transport company? What are the things that they should be saying, yep, it needs to have, you know, this and this?
Yeah. Is there a form of accreditation? That's what we're sort of, I think.
Yeah. Well, is there even, yeah, is it regulated at all as well?
No, to be honest, there's no regulation behind it at all, which is a real shame. And that's why, you know, when we really got into it, Trish and I, you know, I said to her, we do this properly or we don't do it at all. You know, it's got to be good enough for our own animals. And, you know, I hold my animals at such a high standard. Up until recently, I was using a trailer with my own dogs, but that trailer was air conditioned. That trailer had cameras. That trailer had, you know, a thermometer in it so I could keep an eye on the temperature going through it. So I knew exactly what was going on in that trailer. I've just upgraded now to a van. So people still use trailers, and I'm not against using trailers as long as they're set up correctly and the driver knows what's going on in those trailers. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with transporting a dog in a trailer as long as it's done correctly. But people need to just make sure that whoever they're using has insurance, both transit insurance and liability insurance, which we do, and that the pens are clean and secure. So, you know, there is a lot of, dare I say it, cowboys that are getting into the industry, just trying to make a quick buck and overcharge people that, you know, pens aren't secured incorrectly, or they're using lightweight cages and stuff. You know, at the moment, we're still setting up the van. It's a growing process. So, you know, we have airline travel crates that we're using. Pretty soon that's going to be transferred into a metal crate that is solid, an airline approved, of course, but solid crates for just more safety and easier to clean. So, you know, it's just doing their research and asking the right questions. That's all it is, really, and making sure they're comfortable with who they're using.
You know what? I'm surprised it isn't regulated. And, you know, I can guarantee it will be. The problem is that government, it's something will happen in the industry. You know, I'm surprised someone hasn't set up a puppy scam in a van. They pretend they're going to take them. They steal all the dogs too. It's interesting, not regulated. That tells me that you're not making enough money yet for the government to be interested.
The flight section like anyone can actually book a flight, but the flights are becoming more regulated. They are asking that you're a member of certain associations and you have done certain courses. Now, I've already got all those.
Yeah.
When we fly internationally, we buy our flights through a regulated company who has certain accreditations. But then for us to walk in and lodge the dogs, we still have to have certain accreditations as well and licensing with government departments, which we have. Mm. But just the road transport, that's not regulated.
No, interesting.
And it's a huge industry already.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people have been doing it for a very long time, and that's, you know, and some of them haven't been doing it right because they've been, you know, trying to keep their costs down in how they do it. So, you know, and it's an industry that does need to be regulated.
I agree. But
I also look at our RSPCA and the way they transport their animals, and it's still not at a high standard either, you know, because they just want to get them in and get them out. But, you know, it's an industry that does need to be looked at quite heavily. But at the moment, they're focusing on other things.
There is regulation when I'm just driving my own dog in my own vehicle. It must be...
Yeah, restrained and not in the front seat.
Yeah, and it happens, you know. You could be pulled over by law enforcement if your dog's sitting with its head sticking out a window and could actually fine you for not restraining it. So I'm interested that it seems to happen.
That regulation is under your DPI regulations, and that covers, I believe, everyone. Every dog has to be restrained. And that's the other thing. Some of the transporters, if you look inside their vehicles, you'll see flimsy, collapsible wire crates stacked on top of one another.
Yeah.
So all it says is restrained or in a crate. So, you know, what kind of crates they are in, that's not regulated. Mm. So those airline containers, yeah, they're good, but the ones we're putting in, they're exceptional.
Oh, I'm hoping, if anything, this podcast might get some discussion happening, and Nathan has influence at high levels, at government level, and he could push few buttons and look at it. Interesting, I just can't believe it's not regulated. Yeah. It literally could have anyone who set something up, grab all these puppies, Nathan, tell you you're taking everyone, and then actually, you know.
Yeah, and that's why you've got to do that due diligence. Look at all those 5-star reviews, as Tricia said, and just make sure that, you know, you've seen the vehicle, they're insured, go through the checks. It makes perfect sense. You put as much diligence into choosing your breeder, but the dog's got to get to you. So you've got to make sure that the person who's transporting it is, you know, up to standard as well.
It's also how many hours are they allowing their drivers to do without having breaks? So that's why...
That's right.
Like our drivers we just have one come back from Cairns. So she went Brisbane to Cairns. She did that in 2 days, but she took 3 days off in Cairns. Then she drove back to Brisbane. Some of those dogs went down to Melbourne with Michael. She was not to continue that trip. She had to stop before she was allowed to drive home. And that's just the way we regulate it with our drivers as well. We don't let them do that. I've seen some vehicles going across to Perth in ridiculous times, and you know that they have not stopped.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes they only have one driver. So they are questions to ask, like how many, even if you do a bit of research yourself, figure out how long it should actually take to do non-stop, then think about that the vehicle should be stopping, the driver should be having brakes.
You make sure you've got a driver understands a bit about pets and, you know, requirements and, you know, what they need, you know. It's not just simply having anyone who understands the roads. They've got to have some understanding of, you know, when a dog vomits, what it means, and when a dog does, you've got to clean this. And it's interesting. I just still can't believe it's not regulated. But one thing that is regulated is George's competition time.
That's your best segue yet, I have to say. My hats are off to you there.
So what we do, Michael and Trish, and unfortunately, Trish, you can't apply. We give away a full breed profile to every podcast, and there's a competition. And I want people to email me with Michael's breed that he referred to at the start of the podcast. I want you to email me the breed that he's passionate about. And I want you to email me on January the 20th, And I want you to do it between 10:50 and 10:55. We make these competitions tough, Mike. I don't want people just listening to the 5 minutes of the show and think so. They've got to listen to the start, and now we're almost towards the end of it. It's January the 20th. I don't care if it's a Sunday or a Monday or a Saturday, and it's got to be between 10:50 and 10:55 a.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time.
Yeah, that's it. It's a Thursday, George, so... That's it.
And we try and make it easy too, guys, because we had some complaints from Western Australian people that I was making times difficult for them, like 6 in the morning. So I've made the time reasonable for them as well. It's not going to be too early. So you email me with the breed. All the previous winners have been excited about their full breed profile. I even had a winner last week, Nathan, who hadn't even set up a breeder's account yet, but wanted the loyalty points program because he's going to start testing. Excellent.
Yeah, that's what we love to hear.
Value of $195 for those listening. Yeah. So, Michael, get your friends applying for it and emailing with the answer. I'm happy family guests can also be winners, just not people who are a part of the podcast.
Not the guests.
So I can't use my other 10 email addresses.
Yeah. Oh, look, you know, do whatever you want. The competition, as long as I get it in, I haven't had two that have done it at the same time, so I'd be love to get down where I have to pull something out of the hat and out of the three that got to me award one to one of the three.
And I mean, we do have a lot of breeders that listen, and I think that's one of the great things, you know, about Azzurburn is that both of you are breeders, so you get it. You know what, you know, transport should look like. And because we've got breeders that are avid listeners, I'm keen to hear your thoughts. What should breeders be doing? You know, breeders of young pups in that, you know, first 8 weeks that they have, what can they be doing to help prepare their pups for transport if they are being transported, you know, whether it's by road or by air? As breeders, what would you be recommending other breeders do to help them, you know, have that, I guess, feel comfortable and feel as confident as possible when they're on the road?
Well, if they have access to the likes of the crates or anything like that, start doing a little bit of crate training with them, particularly if they're going to be flown, and definitely be separated from mum before they leave so that they're comfortable to be away from mum. They're probably, to me, they're the most important things. They're comfortable to be in the crates. Mm. And most dogs, by the time, I know my guys, by the time they're ready to leave, try getting them out of a crate. They're pretty happy to be going around in one. They like going in it because they know they're going to go in the car or they're going to go and do something. I also feed mine in their crates, so they're fed in them. They can't wait to get in there. They think there's more tucker. They sleep in them. They look forward to them. I don't know how many can actually fit in one. If you go out and check occasionally, I'm pretty sure there's about 10 in there occasionally. It's a bit like that little ad with all the dogs all getting out of a crate. So I find that they have had that access to the crates and separation from mum. They travel a lot better. And young puppies travel well anyhow.
Yeah. And I think the only other thing you would, you know, possibly do, especially if you know they're sort of travelling on their own for an extended period of time, that they're separated from their siblings every now and then, just so they don't have an anxiety attack about, you know, like the separation anxiety that some pups can go through. If they're travelling together for long periods, not an issue. It's more just, yeah, if you're going to put one in a plane on its own, might like being in a crate, but usually it has its siblings with it and it's just going to scream the house down or be very unsettled.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Mike, because it's exactly what happened when I picked up Mary. The driver did state the last sort of 4 or 5 hours because, say, best friend was taken and dropped off in somewhere in New South Wales. Mary spent the last part coming into Victoria on her own and she was quite unsettled and didn't like it. Yep. So it's interesting. People don't think about those little intricacies like that where it's actually they have these feelings, these animals, you know what I mean? They all of a sudden Mary was losing... she's on this long journey, all of a sudden losing her buddy. You know, where am I going? For them, it's quite traumatic.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. Mm. Until they get into the arms of
anyone. Oh, thank you, Michael. Yeah. That was it. Until now, it doesn't want to go anywhere. You sit that beautifully until they get into the arms. It was so nice. And my partner came along. It was just, we're like, we're picking up a new baby.
Oh, it'd be such an exciting moment. I'm sure you see a lot of happy, you know, new puppy parents, and I'm sure that's a rewarding part of the job.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I've even had a couple of people that have given us gifts like little food hamper gifts and things like that at the other end. They're just so appreciative, and you know, like just the excitement that people, it's awesome.
You'd get hugs and joys and kisses, the whole lot. I could just see it now. Your job's awful.
Oh, it's terrible, mate.
It is. I don't know how you cope. Well, can I ask you, what is the oldest dog you've transported, Trish? What is the oldest?
I think it might have been sent a 16-year-old pug, went from Melbourne to Cairns on road transport.
Wow. And tell me why.
Because the pug failed its brachycephalic airway exam and could not go on the same flight as their owners. So we transported it by road up there for them. And then when they arrived in Cairns, they found out their other dogs that were supposedly going with them had been bumped off the flight. So the following month, we also took them up.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because it is getting harder and harder now. I mean, at one stage, flights, some flight companies refused to even take them.
Yeah.
Is that right? There was a complete ban on them. Mm.
On the brachycephalics, there was a complete ban on them. Yeah. And I think through summer they should be banned. We have a policy within our own business that takeoff and landing temperature for your brachies is 25 degrees. And we'd like to put that really across all of them. They can't be landing in 35 degrees.
No.
It's just ridiculous. It's not safe, and we won't do it. I'm sure there's other companies who would fly them out, but, you know, I don't think it's worth the risk. You can't put things in the airline containers anyhow to try and keep the temperature down. And then when they're in the hull of the plane, it's actually quite cold. So you don't want them getting cold in there as well. So they're coming out of that hull into quite warm temperatures.
Let me say something, Trish. At 35 degrees in the middle of a tarmac, even if you're not a brachycephal, it's
uncomfortable for anyone.
Uncomfortable, even a golden retriever. You know, sometimes people flying dogs in the middle of the day when it's stinking hot. There should be you've got to have them on before 6 in the morning so it's not stinking hot. Being left in the middle of tarmacs, and in some ways, you know, airline companies have a responsibility too. But you know, my argument is it doesn't matter what breed, at that temperature, stuck in a crate, whatever it is, and sometimes they're left there for half an hour, it would be awful for any breed. So
it's not just the tarmac, though. It's getting on the plane. And if that plane's delayed, they're stuck in the hole with not a lot of circulation or anything. So, you know, we like to see them go out as early as possible or as late as possible regardless. And we do keep an eye on that temperature. So, you know, it's out of our control. Once we drop that puppy off, it's out of our control. So we just put plans in place to hopefully negate any issues once we hand the pup over or the cat. So, yeah, and that's where, you know, road transport is a little bit better because they're supervised by animal people. For us, we only employ animal people. You know, they're supervised for the whole trip.
Yeah, and you know what, I'm also conscious, Michael, that you've got to get back on the road as well. You know, you've pulled over for our podcast, but I'm sure there's a lot of families that are hoping to get their pup very soon. So, one of the things that we always do just to end the podcast is we do ask all of our guests, you know, if there's one message that you could put out to all of our listeners, you know, put it on a billboard, let everyone know, help educate them about, you know, say animal transport, what would be that one message that you want them to take away?
For me, I think it's just do your research and be comfortable with who you're dealing with. And that's not just with transport. That's when you're purchasing puppies or kittens or anything like that. Just do your research and be comfortable. You know, things can go wrong. But as long as you go in with that, knowing that and being comfortable, that will negate a lot of issues down the track.
Yeah, agree. I know for me, it was just the thrill of the app and seeing the dot getting closer and closer was exciting for me too. And you're right, it's comfort. And most of the transport people, I will say, do things very well and professionally. And that's one thing that I was guided by. I was given really nice up-to-date information by everyone, just the journey beforehand. And then even when the dog was handed to you, it's a comfortable way they do it as well. They're nice. They told you a bit. I think what you do is great. I think it's an industry that is, and every time I look, correct me, there's almost more and more, you know. I'm sure you're finding that there's more and more, and it's more competitive for you, and there's more and more dogs being transported by road. They're preferring it to a plane. Plane travel is not fun for humans, let alone dogs at the moment. People that think flying is great, they only look at the easy part. So people are driving more now to places because it's just easier. Nathan, we've come to that part of the show too, which is really the I know that every podcast is educational, but this part of the show is probably the most educational because it educates even yourself.
Oh, for sure, with Professor George.
Yes, that's right. So what happens is the guest chooses a number between 1 and 170-odd, and I pick a page from that my genetic book of my top 120 diseases, and I educate people on the disease. So I think we'll give the honour to Michael, who's sort of in, I know, Trish, it's rude of me not to ask you as well, but Michael's sort of in the van, let's get this all live, and it's you know, pick me a number, Michael, between 1 and 170, please.
Let's go 99.
Is that's not the speed you're travelling down the highway, is it?
Oh, well, no, that's too slow. The highway speed's 110 because that's what the speed limit is.
That's it.
And I don't know if we've spoken about this one before, but he's chosen a really controversial one.
Ooh.
It's Merle/Dapple.
No, I don't think we've spoken about Merle.
So excellent. So this is a whole segment. We could talk Merle and Dapple patterns. Trish, no Merles in any of your lines. Are there anything we need to know about? No, Trish?
No. That'd be removed pretty fast.
Yeah, I thought so. So, look, it's something we're seeing popping up in more and more breeds. Don't ask me how they get there, guys, but, you know, we're seeing some poodles with Merle and Frenchies with Merle and some other bull breeds for Merle. And we all know where Merle comes from. It comes from basically a working collie line, and it's that sort of pattern that causes the distribution of colour to just go sort of randomly in a way. And what we try and avoid is a Merle-to-Merle mating can lead to potential health issues. But since this book was written, the technology's changed a lot. So we're now able to determine different types of Merles. So there's now seven different types of Merles, all determined by a different size in the base pair. And the reason why the different types of Merles are important is because it allows for the people like in Australian Shepherds, you may have a cryptic Merle where the Merling pattern isn't as strong, but you can mate a cryptic to a cryptic or an atypical to a cryptic. So it moves away from your classic Merle. So this is almost it's a great choice, Michael. In fact, you know, this is the best choice I've had because I could literally talk half an hour, but it's Merle. It's seen classic in the Australian Shepherd, some of the working dogs.
Border collies.
And the reason why Merle is challenging is because it's hidden behind a red dog. So if you have a red Dachshund, for example, it doesn't express the Merling pattern. So you want to try and avoid putting a Merle to Merle together if it's hidden behind those. That's why in some of the traditional breeds you test for it. But at the moment, Tricia, it's gone the other way. It's become fashionable,
correct,
if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And people are now looking for Merles because it has a attractiveness amongst some people looking for that different phenotype. But
I think I think it's overdue that we have an episode on colour and Merle. I think it's a big topic, could take up the whole episode.
So you want to try and avoid putting a classic Merle together with a classic Merle because it does lead to potential health issues. Hmm. So, again, great choice, fantastic, page 99. And although here it's listed when the book was written it had about 10 breeds, it's almost doubled. So don't ask me how it's got into the French Bulldog, Trish. Don't ask me how it's got into the Poodle. It didn't just randomly appear. It must have got in there from some sort of collie that was put in. Oh, look, don't go. We don't know.
We won't go there.
No.
We know that, 200 years of breeding, we would have seen it beforehand. We all know that.
Yep.
Someone would have made the accidental mistake once before.
Yes, that's right. Oh, the accidental mistake. The Merle, not only an accidental mistake, but a Merle accidental mistake, if you know what I mean.
A lot of
deliberate accidental mistake.
That's right. Well, what a fantastic start to the 2022 podcast, where we've had two people, different sites, one live in the thing, one in the office. It's been really interesting.
Yeah, we're going to need to have more. I'm going to have to think of more live activities where we can have people, you know, on the road in the moment. We'll get George down at a dog show doing live commentary, or we'll have to think of something.
Yeah, and this just really came out of left field. You didn't even pre-warn us, Trish and Michael. We thought we were going to have both of you in an office with a fan going, and, you know, but in the van, it was when Michael came on, we went, what? You know, in the van. And you know what? When Nathan sent me the details, I thought, oh, what are we going to talk about? This will be over in 10 minutes. Pet travel, really? I couldn't even Google any.
I think we've only scratched the surface.
Oh, no, we could go for another hour.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can't do that. I've got to get back on the road.
That's it.
We've got
life is a highway.
Maybe we can have that track leading into.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to get our producer to play us out with that song. No, I love it. Look, Michael, Trish, thanks for joining us. It was awesome. Everyone listening, Azaburn Animal Transport, we'll put a link in the show notes. You can check them out. But yeah, it was great to have you on.
Yeah, lovely.
Thank you for having us.
Great.
Thank you. Really pleasure. Good.